Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Time now for The Drive with Mark Ennis on 93.9 The Ville. The Drive is brought to you by Fitness Market, Louisville's premier location for fitness equipment and in-home saunas. Online at thefitnessmarket.com. Now here's Mark Ennis and Jeff Lightsey Jr.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Jeff Lightsey Jr. going to be joined by Harry Douglas and Frank Minifield here shortly. But while we wait to hear from them, we're talking about very quickly those EA Sports rankings that came out. And look, the stadium one, that was somewhat you can see how that's subjective.
Very.
Right?
Very
and subjective. That various people might value different things. Mm-hmm. But with some of these ratings,
yes,
because every team's going to have like their offense, defense rated on the game, at least to start. This year's ranking should – the rankings for each team are like – they should correspond to what the teams are in reality this season.
Absolutely.
Some of these don't make an ounce of sense to me.
Not even a little bit.
Offensive power rankings on here, the number one offense, they've got Oregon and Georgia both at 94 overall, 1 and 2. All right. I'm fine with that. Like some of these ones at the top, I probably would have Ohio State higher.
Yeah,
with I'd everything probably, they've done in the offseason?
Yeah, I'd probably have them number one. Or in the
way up there.
Yeah,
Texas, way up there.
Yeah, Texas, Ohio State, yeah. Oregon I can see because they got Gabriel, and I think just landing recruits out of his mind up there, so I get that as well.
Here's what bothers me. Basically, after you get out of the top five, LSU at 6, even without Neighbors and without Jalen, like Jaden Daniels.
Three first-round picks.
Yeah, like, that's a lot to
and
replace.
One of them in a Heisman quarterback.
Yeah, it's a lot to be replaced. Miami at 7. Based on what?
Cam Ward.
It's got to be just Cam Ward.
I mean, it can't be anything else. Like, it has to, like, because I can't name you another player. Cam Ward, Ruben May. And I'm someone that pays attention to the ACC. I can't name you another Cam Ward on offense, Ruben Main on defense.
Because one of the running backs came here, Chaney. So
yeah,
like he's not there.
I don't have anything else for you. Nothing. Number 7 in the game. Get out of here.
It gets worse.
I know it does.
Colorado at 8. They had a lot of passing yards last year, but like yards per play, they were 99th last year, and they. I think there were plays where he got sacked more than once on some plays.
Absolutely.
That was how, like, an atrocious offensive line there. We're not effective against anybody good the last two-thirds of the season at all. What the hell is that?
They have Shador and Travis Hunter. That's it.
There it is. I mean, that's it, though. And their head coach is Deion Sanders. Like, that's what it's about. Their head coach is Deion Sanders. I think Shador may be the highest rated, if I'm not mistaken, the highest rated player, like, quarterback on the game. And Travis is on the cover, so they had to have them up there. They couldn't have a cover athlete in his team be like the 33rd best team in the game, which is like being generous. So they have to boost them up because their cover athlete is on the team, even though they were 4-8 last year.
See, this is where somebody has to step in and be like, guys, we're asking for CAD drawings of everybody's stadiums. Like we're killing. We're having actors go out and run down a hill to reenact Clemson to get all this accuracy stuff, and then we're just gonna make Colorado one of the best offenses because Deion is cool. What are we doing?
That's exactly what happened, Mark.
Is Deion even?
That's
cool?
Exactly what happened. Oh, no, he's pretty cool. He's pretty cool, Spencer.
I don't know. He's kind of engaged.
He's pretty cool. Yeah. And he's cool to certain demographics, too. And part of those demographics are the people that are going to buy this game, like college football people. Now, there's people that hate all the antics. Let's not get it twisted. There, for as many people that think he's cool and dope, there's whether they're silent or loud, a large number of people that think that total opposite. This is not how championships are won. And if you're serious about winning a championship, you can't have a freaking DJ in the locker room before a big game. Like, you know, so, like, which I agree with.
It's not typically what good teams are doing.
No, like, yeah. Is Kirby Smart got a DJ in the locker room before a big game? No.
Yeah.
Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Jim Harbaugh, like, great college – Harbaugh's in the league now, and Saban's retired, but, like, great college football coaches. It's not what they do. He's very non-traditional. But it is cool to a large number of people. And, once again, he has – probably the coolest player in the country in Travis Hunter, too. And even if you don't think he's cool, everybody thinks Travis is cool. To play 100 snaps every game and to do, like, just ridiculous stuff on both sides of the ball, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, Travis Hunter, like, we should all work hard to not let whatever we think about Deion and, like, his antics and that sort of thing mm-hmm. color the fact that, like, there's a trend among athletes now to just play the least amount possible.
Absolutely.
And to have kind of this protective, kind of preventative mm-hmm. mindset. And with football, at least it kind of makes sense mm-hmm. With the risks that are involved. But, you know, load management in basketball, mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. Pitch counts.
Yes.
It was refreshing. I worried about him. It kind of made me uncomfortable. But it was kind of refreshing for him just to be like, I'm going to play 200 plays a game. I don't care what you say.
Yeah. Like, it was don't nice. Take me out.
Yeah.
Like I will get pissed if you take me out of this game because there's nobody that's as good as me. And he might be right. And the thing is, it's like you. It's one thing to say that and to demand them not. And then it's another thing to go out and make some of the plays that he makes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
He played a lot. It was awesome.
Yeah. You're like, now he had his moments. I think he's a way better receiver than corner. That's just me for someone who's watched him for 2 years. But let's not get it twisted. He makes plays that, like, I don't know if anybody else in college football can make on both sides of the ball. Like, on offense, he's Justin Jefferson with a 40-inch vertical. And on defense, he's at the cornerback position. He's an athlete that just most cornerbacks just aren't. He's like the size of Pat Surtain with the athleticism, I mean, of, like, Jalen Ramsey or something. Like he's like Jalen Ramsey on defense and Justin Jefferson on offense.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a hell of a player.
Yeah, like if Colorado's worth a damn this year, he easily is the hot Heisman conversation. Like he was early last year when they were 3-0 before you know he gets injured and the bottom just falls out of Colorado's team that year. But like yeah, he is a tremendous football player. Like if you're not tuning in just for Deion, you're tuning in to watch Travis Hunter because he is going to do big plays on Sunday in the future.
The other one that I think bothered a lot of people, Clemson at 10. Like, yeah. Everyone who watched Clemson last year knows, like, that was not a good offense. And they didn't change
anything at
about
all.
That offense. And I think Clemson, I think Colorado, I think Miami to an extent, they represent the real challenge of one of these games. A&M's offense at 18, based on what?
Yeah.
Especially with the new coach. Like,
whose offense isn't that great? Like,
yeah,
Duke,
right,
it was
right.
Just
it wasn't
okay.
Like he was lighting it up.
Yeah,
Duke,
no.
Right. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. I think it highlights one of the challenges of a video game is capturing, like, when an offense is just better than its individual parts.
Mm-hmm.
Or when an offense has individual parts that are really good, but it stinks.
There
because
it is.
That happens in football all the time. Mm-hmm. And this is like, well, if you add them up, these are the best ones.
Yeah.
But that's not how it works.
No, and that's why it's video game and not reality. Because that, and to your point, like we were talking about, let's just use Colorado, for example. You're going to have two players on offense who are like 95 plus. So that's going to automatically, you know, tip the scale to them being a top to whatever number offense, top 10 offense. Because they're going to have Shedeur Sanders. I think he's the highest rated quarterback in the game, whether you think that's true or not.
Right.
He is. And then you have Travis Hunter, which is like one of the highest rated players in the game. So now you're talking about two players on your offense that are 95 plus. I can't have them as an 81 offense when there's two players that are
when
over.
They kind of are.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like in reality, yeah, they are. But when you when I have a 90, let's call it 95 quarterback and a 97 wide receiver, I got to at least make these complimentary pieces like somewhat applicable, whether they are or not in reality, because I know people are going to want to play with Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter.
Now, on the defensive ratings, little better, but you got Ohio State 1, Georgia, Oregon, Alabama, Clemson. These all make sense. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame, Texas, Penn State. Like, I don't really have a giant issue with really any of the defensive ones. They seem to have done a better job with that. It was nice to see Louisville at 22.
That was cool. I was actually surprised by that, but I was happy. Pleasantly
you were,
surprised.
You were? I'm not. What surprised you about that?
Well, it's...
surprised you were surprised.
Well, I am saying that because traditionally, Louisville's not looked at as like a powerhouse defense. Even though, what I will say is that the game is showing a ton of respect to Ashton Gelati, at least.
Yeah.
For what we know so far. And then to see them team ranked at 22, they're actually showing respect to the entire defense. But I think it goes back into what I said earlier and why it makes sense for them to be 22. I can't have a 91 Ashton Gelati and then have – or whatever he is. Maybe he's 90. I imagine he's in the 90s.
I did see, like, you could buy one of those expansions
yes.
and have him as a Heisman candidate, mm-hmm. possibly.
And,
so,
and he was, and so the fact that he's highlighted there, that's what makes me think he is one of the higher rated defensive players for him to be an option there. And so, but the reason why I was surprised is because, once again, I think of Jeff Brohm as an offensive coach and having offensive teams, and I just assumed EA would think of Jeff Brohm as an offensive coach with an offensive team. So to have him at 22nd, I was pleasantly surprised because I do think, especially early in the season, this year's team will have to rely heavily on the defense.
You think so?
I think early. I do think because I think they'll still be trying to figure things out. And maybe they're able to figure it out in those early games, like the Austin Peay's and whatnot. But I think the defense, just on what I know, is so good.
I mean, I think they'll start out better.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think they're expecting to be good right off the bat offensively. But I definitely agree that, like, if you ask me which of these two units are going to be a top 25 one, I would say defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they'll have the luxury of being able to just lean on that defense if there are hiccups. But I'm hopeful that there aren't.
So when I say lean on the defense, I am – It's basically because everybody on the main characters on the offense are new.
Yeah.
Quarterback's new. Your wide receiving core is new. Guys. Your tight ends are new. Offensive line is still intact for the most part. But everybody else is new. And I think it's going to take a game or two for Shuck, the tight ends, the receivers, even the running backs to all kind of gel. And so when I say lean on the defense early, like I don't know, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but I don't know if we're getting a 300 or 350-yard passing game from Tyler Shuck in the first 3 weeks of the season. But by the end of the season, I could see him having multiple games of 300-yard passing, 350 yards passing, et cetera, so on and so forth.
I'm hopeful that they are better than that.
I hope so, too.
I would hope in particular that there's a real effort to air it out some.
I would love that.
just because I think you're going to play some better defenses this year.
Mm, yes.
You're going to need to have seen the ball go through the proverbial net in terms of throws. Like I don't think they're going to be able to play ground and pound and beat all of Kentucky and Clemson and Notre Dame and Miami. Like they're going to have to make some clutch, low percentage throws, win some one-on-ones with wide receivers, all that sort of thing.
Yes. No, plays are going to have to be made through the air this year. Like, your quarterback is going to have to win you a game or two this year. The same didn't have to be said last year. And for the three games that you lost, you needed more plays from the quarterback position. You just didn't get them. And so, therefore, this year, because the schedule is a little more difficult, and I think your quarterback's going to have to make some plays. And because the running backs aren't the same that they were last year, not to say that they're terrible, but they're not Jawar and Isaac, at least not that we know of, your quarterback's going to have to make some plays. And I think he is talented enough to do that. We just have to see if they will be made.
8150-939, that is the number if you would like to jump in here. A texter suggested what they really need on this thing is coaching rankings, in particular coaching rankings that are, that act like kind of a multiplier or something, where just having that guy as the coach of some side of the ball makes his team that much better at it. Because I think we all look at Jeff Brohm that way, don't we?
Absolutely. You have to.
I do. I look at, like, you give me a collection of schleps that I wouldn't think are especially good, but Jeff Brohm is coaching them. I'm like, all right, I'll see what they got.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to give him a chance.
I like our chances.
Yeah.
You know, with that guy, I like our chances because, well, simply because it's been proven. Like, in football, that matters. Like, so in football, if you have a guy like Jeff Brohm, you expect points because guess what? He's given you points for years. Same with guys like Lincoln Riley. Like, if you're your USC team, I may not be able to stop anybody. I may give up 50 points per game, but I think we can score 51. Like, I think we can score.
Yeah.
You know, we produce, when you have, what, 3 or 4 Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks and score all these points and all this stuff, like, I expect to score points. I expect to do this. So, therefore, if I give Jeff Brohm a collection of just guys and say, hey, I need touchdowns from these guys, just make it happen, somehow, some way, he seems to always figure out a way to make it happen.
Interesting of note here in the last couple of minutes, reporting now that Bronny James, the only reason to really watch round 2 of the NBA draft on the next day, Rich Paul is apparently telling teams, this is according to Bob Myers on ESPN, is telling teams, do not draft him. He's going to Australia. And I guess that sort of makes sense because I've never really believed he had great draft prospects anyway. But you know what that sounds like to me, Jeff?
What does it sound like?
No one was going to draft him anyway.
There it is.
And this is cover.
This is a spin.
This is cover, yes.
I would say Calder Bluff and, like, Bill Simmons threw it. I know you hate Bill Simmons, Mark, but, like, he threw out the possibility, like, have Boston just take Bronny and just basically hold him hostage and make L.A. give you an offer to, like, just recoup some assets to get Bronny James. That's what some teams should do, is just hold him hostage.
Well, now he's saying he'd play in Australia. So what's the point? Now you're just wasting your draft.
He's owned his rights, though.
Yeah, you own the rights until, like,
for
indefinite. No, it's indefinite in the NBA. Cause,
oh, okay.
Yeah, like, there's, like, technically some teams own rights for guys that haven't played in, like, 10 years because they drafted them and they just never came overseas.
Is it worth whatever media storm Rich Paul would have, though, if you did that? Like, is that worth it?
I'm just saying. Yeah.
Especially for a team that just won a championship in Boston.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I don't want Boston to do it necessarily, but, like, some other team, call their bluff and, like, okay, go play in Australia because, like, maybe if you're cap-ridden, like, you're going to get second apron, it's like, okay, we'll draft and stash you in Australia for a year. Like, that's not going to hurt us because we never plan on playing you this year to begin with.
It doesn't hurt you in a sense of, like you said, second-round picks don't always pan out. Most of them don't. It's just the media firestorm that you'd be under because of what you did holding, because this is LeBron James and Rich Paul we're talking about. Like, these aren't just regular people. Like, these are people with a ton of connections, with a ton of outlets to come do and say whatever and call you whatever you may or may not be for playing a game with them like this. Like, they can call you all kinds of whatever because they have that power. And is that negative press worth getting a couple of draft assets or whatever that may be? Like, no, to me, hell no. Like, it's not even that's why. But, like, Mark, this is spin, though. Like, this is spin because he didn't work out for any other team besides the Lakers and I think the Suns. And
that's
two
is Myers mentioned the Suns as well.
Yeah. Okay. And so two, it's like we never had him on the board anyway. He's a 6'1" guard who averaged 4 points a game in college. Like, we can find that anywhere. And he's athletic. He's athletic as heck. But guess what? So is everybody in the NBA. Like, so is literally everybody in the NBA. So, yeah, holding him hostage or whatever is not worth the media firestorm that would come, especially if you were a team like the Celtics. So, yeah, I just leave it alone and let him go to the Lakers at 55.
The texter in the UPS Jobs text line says, did that bastard Flowers get drafted?
Not yet. I'll need to do the breaking news if Flowers gets drafted on this show so we can have a field day with that. Because I did see, I think it was Kevin O'Connor at the Ringer had him projected like 57 or 58 in his mock draft a couple days ago.
It's like at the very, very bottom.
No, that's the absolute last.
Because he had two teams got picks taken away. I think it was the Bucks and the Heat. No, he just drafted. So Bucks and someone else got picks taken away for tampering. So it's only 58 picks this year.
Any of these picks, anything jump out at you out of the first round? I know not everyone loves the guy that went number one overall.
Oh, yeah.
I do love Dillingham to Minnesota. That seems great. Like a steal.
Him and Shannon?
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what they were missing. They were the best defensive team or one of the best defensive teams in basketball.
Yeah.
But against the Mavericks, they ran out of firepower. Like, Ant
got
tired.
Match up.
Yeah, Ant got tired. And there wasn't enough bucket getters. Cat was hot and cold. Ant got tired, and there wasn't enough bucket getters. Now you're just adding two guys that's what they do. Yep. They go in and they get buckets. And so that's exactly what they need. Granted, they'll be rookies, but you need it. If they can give you a combined, 16 points off the bench or 18 points off the bench, that's going to be awesome. And I'm lowballing, but you can get 18 points off the bench between those two would be awesome. That was probably. And then Dalton Connect going to the Lakers. I know we're talking about the Lakers.
I like that.
That was
I love it
favorite.
Too. And I hate that I love it, Jeff. I hate that. Yeah. I love
Why
it.
Do you love it?
Because he's a shooter that's going to play with J.J. Redick's offense now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, Dalton Connect going to the Lakers was me being a Lakers fan. But, two, I was a Dalton Connect fan. I thought the Spurs could get him at 8 and it would be awesome. But he falls all the way to 17 only strictly based on the fact that he was 23 years old. Yeah, give me that all day. He's like, no, there's nothing wrong with him as a player. He's just old. It's like, he's old at 23? Hey, so what? He can come in and contribute. Now, that's a guy at 23 that can come in day one and average 13 a game.
So, all right. We are happy now to be joined by Frank Minifield, who is intimately involved with the Kentucky Pro Football or Kentucky Football Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame, excuse me. And he joins us now here. Frank, it's good to talk with you, man. Thank you for making time for us. How's everything going?
Oh, we appreciate you guys making time for us. And everything makes more great. This is a great time in Kentucky's history to celebrate football.
Well, let folks know what's going on here. I know we've got another class going in. Locally beloved Harry Douglas, one of those guys that's going in here. I don't know how many people really know necessarily about Kentucky having a Pro Football Hall of Fame and that you are a big part of getting this going and keeping it going. Tell folks about this and what's coming up here in the next couple of days.
Well, it actually was in Louisville for about 5 years. We used to celebrate, I think it was the 10th year of the existence of the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame that we moved it to Louisville, and we was actually there for five years in Louisville. And we're proud about four things I like to mention. First, Kentucky is the only state in America that has its own Pro Football Hall of Fame. There's only one other Pro Football Hall of Fame in America, and that's in Canton, Ohio. The second is in the state of Kentucky. The second thing is we have over 112 inductees, alumni, if you would, in our Hall of Fame. And I won't ever forget the very first class. The very first class was an unbelievable class. But right after that class, right after that induction ceremony, somebody said, wow, man, that was awesome, man. But do we have enough football players to do this every year? And here we are 23 years later, and our class is just as good as that first class. And really, that shows us how good football is in the state of Kentucky.
I think it's underrated. I think you're absolutely right about that, Frank. You are a great story. I wonder how many people really realize that you walked on at U of L – you were undrafted free agent and were a multi-year Pro Bowl player as a result. I mean, where did that come from that you were able to sort of overlooked at the next level, still able to sort of make one heck of a pro football career and sort of be in the role that you're in now?
Well, the best thing that ever happened to Frank Minifield was showing up at the University of Louisville as a walk-on and happened to do everything he could to be on the team. And even worse was I had to play man-to-man almost exclusively on defense that really prepared me for the NFL. Because we had to blitz all the time, because we didn't have as much talent as a Florida or Florida State or Georgia did. And so we blitzed a lot when I played for the Cardinals. And that prepared me for what I was going to do in the NFL. And, you know, that was my calling card, was man-to-man defense. You basically give me one man that you didn't want to participate in the game, and that was my game.
Frank, you look back on Cleveland or U of L, excuse me, U of L now. We'll talk about Cleveland in a second, but U of L now, like when you watch and look at what U of L, like facilities wise and in the ACC and that sort of thing, do you ever catch yourself being like, man, where was all this when I was there? They certainly seem to have come quite a long ways from when you were there.
Well, if you put yourself in my shoes and if you came from where I came from, my eyes was bigger than saucers. When I got to University of Louisville, I thought it was the most awesome thing I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
You know, I never saw artificial turf until I got to the University of Louisville. I've never went to a real college football game until I got to the University of Louisville. I mean, I didn't go to a University of Kentucky football games. I mean, that was way too expensive for my neighborhood. And so University of Louisville was the most impressive thing I ever saw, but you're right. It's almost 10 times as impressive now based on all the things that they've been able to do over the past three decades that I've been gone. So I'm very, very impressed. I don't know if a lot of people know, but for 3 years I served as the board chair of the University of Louisville. So I was really right at the forefront of everything starting to improve as far as football was concerned. Really enjoyed my role, what little role I had in helping the Cardinals improve their program.
Frank, it's Jeff Leitze here. I just want to ask about this year's class, specifically okay. About Harry, and just what went into the process of selecting the members, and what was it like to see someone like Harry Douglas get inducted into this year's Hall of Fame class?
Well, the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame has a 20-person committee. And that 20-person committee basically review almost every football player that have played five or more years in the NFL from every college in the state of Kentucky. We go through that process every year. And every year, there's an opportunity for UK to either select first or select second, or University of Louisville to select first or second. And so they alternate every year. But first, we basically say it's University of Louisville's year to select first. So we will spend probably a month reviewing all the guys that play for the University of Louisville, even the ones that are at the end of their career, we will actually put them on the list, and we will review them for almost a month, and then we'll do the same thing. So after University of Louisville actually gets a player on this year's roster, then it becomes UK's time, and we'll spend another month looking at all of UK's players that have played in the NFL. And we go through that process, and the one thing I really want to emphasize is that you notice that there's only one University of Louisville player in this class, there's only one UK player in this class, there's only one Western Kentucky kid in this class, and that's by design. Because the last thing we want this to turn out to be is a Kentucky Wildcat Hall of Fame or a University of Louisville Hall of Fame. Because all these other colleges, Eastern Kentucky, Western Kentucky, Marion, they've all had great football players. And the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame represents the entire state of Kentucky. And we've had some unbelievable stories of players from the state of Kentucky overcoming all kinds of odds, similar to Frank Minifield and his story. There's a ton of those stories because, you know, you are already behind the eight ball by being, when you are born in the state of Kentucky and you grow up playing football in the state of Kentucky, because everybody, for some reason, believes Georgia, Texas, Florida, their kids are better football players than our kids.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it don't turn out to be true. That might be a whole lot more kids that play football in those states, but the kids that come from the state of Kentucky, I mean, some of our greatest players are some of the greatest players that ever played in the NFL. I mean, the Johnny Unitas, the Monty Dawson. I mean, those guys are Hall of Famers no matter where they're at.
Yeah.
Or what state they grew up in. So we hold our own. I know that there's a lot of people out there that like to think that the state of Kentucky is a basketball state. But when you look at the number of players that have played in the NFL from the state of Kentucky, it dwarfs the number of kids that have played NBA from the state of Kentucky.
We're talking with Frank Minifield about the next induction of players into the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame. One of the players that's going in posthumously, Fred Davis. And I don't know a lot of people who know a lot about him, but that this is another one of these stories of a guy who worked his way from the city of Louisville to a very successful pro career. What can you tell folks about him?
Well, and you know, Fred Davis is on this roster because of the process we go through. We look at players that were there at the beginning of pro football. And we've had a lot of those players from the state of Kentucky that was instrumental in the development of pro football. And Fred Lee Davis is probably one of the greatest football players of all time from the state of Kentucky. He was a two-time Pro Bowler. He won the Super Bowl, won what they called the championship at the time. He won that. And, you know, for a lot of people, the state of Kentucky really let one get away because he went down to Alabama and played his college career. And that's really the reason why a lot of people don't know who he is. And it happens all the time to our players. But There's three ways that you are eligible to be in the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame. And the one way is if you were born in the state of Kentucky, you are always eligible to be in our Hall of Fame. If you play at one of our colleges, it allows you to be eligible to be in our Hall of Fame. And if you choose to live in the state of Kentucky, you're eligible to be in our Hall of Fame. And so the reason why Fred Lee Davis qualified, because he was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and he went to Manual High School.
Hmm.
One of the greatest players ever.
Well, Frank, thank you for making so much time for us. I think a lot of folks maybe didn't even know about this. Is there a website or something anywhere folks maybe can go for more information about the ceremonies or maybe just to go visit it?
Yeah. So it's Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame. .org. Kentucky is abbreviated and Hall of Fame is abbreviated. So it's KY and Pro Football spelled out and Hall of Fame abbreviated HOL.org.
Okay. Well, Frank, thank you so much for making time for us. Hope you enjoy the festivities of this weekend, buddy. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, you guys make room on your schedule next year to be at the program. Y'all be very impressed.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Frank Minifield. That's a good look. I love the criteria.
Yeah.
Right. Like you played. You're from here, mm-hmm. and you went on, did good. You played here, or you stayed here,
or if you live here.
Yeah.
You choose to make Kentucky home. We'll choose to honor you. I love that.
And I love the rivalry awareness of being like one each. We're not trying to turn this thing.
Yeah, that's it.
Even. Pretty funny. All right, let's go ahead and take our last break here. We will come back, wrap things up here on The Drive on Thunderville. Be right back.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. We're in this together. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
You're listening to The Drive, presented by Fitness Market, right here on 93.9 The Ville. Now, here's Mark Ennis and Jeff Lightsey Jr.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Jeff Lightsey Jr. Big thanks to Frank Minifield for joining us there. Well, not sure what happened with Harry Douglas, but I'm sure we'll catch up with him at some point, as he's one of those inductees. I know you and I exchanged messages. That, look, the draft, they're plowing through the second round here. Mm-hmm. Antonio Reeves just got drafted, which reminded me, Calipari did have a guy drafted in the top five.
Yes, he did.
And Arkansas proceeded to engage in nothing short of stolen valor. There's no other word for it than tweeting a graphic of Calipari's face and all them draft picks that happened somewhere else. Every single one of them, you scuzzy bastards. It's insulting. It's corny.
Yes.
We're not stupid, man. Those players all got picked at Kentucky. Why do we let them do this?
And that's what's even funnier, is the fact that it happened at a conference rival. Like, it happened at a team that you play every year, sometimes twice a year. And you're still like, oh, so what? None of these guys ever played for Arkansas. But, get ready, because they're coming. That's what
the next one's
worth. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's essentially what they're saying. They're like, look, this guy does all these cool things with the NBA draft. He's going to do it here, too. At least you hope. Now, what he also may do as well is continue to lose early in March. But you'll have graduation day every year in June. At the end of June, you'll have graduation day, which is the NBA draft.
You know, it was funny seeing, like, Skip Bayless of all people. He was like, I need to discuss on my show why Calipari didn't get the most out of two top 10 picks. Like, okay, Skip, we've been doing this for like 10 years now at this point, but I'm glad you finally saw the line you want to discuss on your show that no one watches.
Well, Skip, that's the thing. That he's just going for ratings. I mean, he's dwindling. Like, he's getting, like, I think they said, like, 40,000 people.
It's brutal.
It went from, like, 140 to, like, 40.
Is that like post Shannon leaving?
Yeah. Like, wow, the ratings on First Take have like boosted 12%, 20%, and his have like went in the tank, like minus 120%. It's like nasty over there right now.
There was a video going around.
Like, anything to get ratings.
There was a video going around. Like, Paul Pierce apparently didn't realize that Reed was Jeff Shepard's son. And like,
found out,
yeah,
like, on the broadcast.
Yeah, Skip's like, yeah, his daddy played for Kentucky, was MOP of the championship with Tubby, and his mom is like, there's something you didn't watch Kentucky game at all, because if you watch a second of Kentucky, they could not stop showing Reed Shepard's parents during the entire broadcast.
It was a good reminder that just because they're former players doesn't mean they're good on TV.
At all.
And Paul Pierce is the worst. I don't enjoy anything about him.
What's so funny is that on the podcast with Kevin Garnett, he's actually awesome. Because KG is awesome, and Paul just says, like, stupid stuff.
Drafts off of him.
Yeah, and then KG just goes in. He just goes in unfiltered, saying everything. Like, P, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm doing the clean version, by the way. And just goes in, and that's always funny.
You know what I think is funny about Arkansas's, like, Arkansas basketball, tweeting that graphic with Cal and his draft picks, is if he were to leave, he's going to claim y'all's too.
Absolutely.
Like, you're admitting the school doesn't matter.
No, pretty much.
Just so you can try to take credit for it when he's going to not give you credit either. He's saying you're going to play at the University of Calipari.
Yeah, like, he's literally recruiting saying that. Like, you have recruits on record saying, like, hey, you know, is it weird that he's going from Kentucky to Cal? And it's like, well, Coach Cal told me straight up, like, you're playing for me. Don't think, like, we're in Arkansas, but you're playing for me. So it doesn't matter if it's Lexington, Fayetteville, Memphis, Mars. It doesn't matter. Playing basketball for Cal. And Coach Cal's got, what did he say yesterday? $5 billion in NBA contracts now.
And Jamal Murray is getting paid.
$200 million. So add it. Now it's going to go up two more billion.
he was on McAfee yesterday, and he said he was asked about, what, retirement?
Yeah.
And said
I've seen
said,
that.
I'm not quite ready yet. I want to help about 30 more families.
30 more families.
And then I'll be done. Like, this is altruistic service.
Hey.
To other families. And if I'm an Arkansas, like, if you, Arkansas fans, listen. Because he's trying to sound different by talking about maybe the team's getting a little older and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get the same tired-ass act that Kentucky got tired of by the end. The postseason won't matter.
Mm-mm.
Last night was graduation night in his mind. We talked about that quote.
The greatest night.
Yeah, like, this is what matters to him, and he thinks it's a self-sacrificing way of the results not mattering. Like, he's trying to basically baptize underachievement in – the service of others.
Yeah.
To where basically it's like, how can you possibly have a look, we got beat in the first round, but these guys got drafted. You don't like guys getting drafted?
You don't like $200 million contracts? You don't like guys making it to the NBA? You don't like generational poverty? Getting rid of generational poverty? You don't like that? Like, who are you? And the funniest thing, too, after the McAfee thing, like, during the – like, all the pictures he was taking. I mean, he – like, his Twitter – I don't follow Calipari, so I don't know how active he is on Twitter. But I'd have to imagine that was the most active his Twitter's probably been in years. I'd imagine. I know he tweets every once in a while, but, like, all the pictures that he took, I think he even took a picture with Alex Saar's family because Olivier Saar played in Kentucky.
Yeah.
He even took a picture with them. So he did the Shepherd family. He did the Dillingham family. And then he even went over there with Olivier Saar and Alex Saar and their family. Said, oh, this is so great family. It's amazing to see their son go number two in the draft. If only he had went Kentucky, he would have went number one. But, you know, we got the first American-born college player in Reed Shepherd. It was great. It was great to see him just chumming it up with all the NBA draft people because that's his natural habitat. He loves it. His cameras, his spotlight. The guys get drafted. Reed Shepherd gets drafted. There's side by side, there's Reed walking up to the court, but in the bigger frame, there's Cal just standing up looking like a proud papa. It was awesome, man. I love it.
Texas says, do you remember the drunk Cal on the beach tweet? Of course. Of course I remember. I was walking on the beach this morning and saw some footprints. It reminded me of that poem, Footprints in the Sand. Yes. He's an all-timer.
Elite tweet.
From him. It really is.
Maybe the best tweet that Cal's ever had.
I no question. It's funny that you mentioned the social media accounts, Twitter accounts and that sort of thing. I could not help but laugh earlier when Chucky Hepburn at the press conference today, we were both at it.
Mm-hmm.
Chucky Hepburn was saying he really didn't know Pat Kelsey at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he Wisconsin his whole career, and that the style of play was different. And obviously Pat Kelsey's demeanor way different than Greg Gard. And he said, the first thing I did was get on Instagram and find his Instagram. You remember? Like,
yeah.
I was like, man, I wonder how many coaches realize, like, this is how they do some of their research here.
Yeah.
And basically was like, I love his energy, so I was open. I was willing to listen.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's easy for them to do that with Pat because he's so active on social media. Like, every coach isn't. Most coaches aren't active on social media. And so if you're asking around about Pat and people are explaining them to you or whatever, somebody may suggest, just get on his socials, man. Get on his Instagram. You'll see. And you get on there, and you see, just like we did. Because that's what we did. As fans, we're just like, man, you know, Pat Kelsey, who is this dude? The first thing we did was see all the videos on Twitter and on Instagram. And it's like, oh, no, this dude's kind of awesome. So just imagining the fact that we did it as a fan base and hearing that an actual recruit did the exact same thing is actually pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
I hadn't even thought about it from that angle. That's a good point.
It's the exact same thing we did.
And for what it's worth, like, it's a good reminder, or it's a lesson to be learned here. Like, if you're a coach, you really don't have the option to be, like, social media reclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you can't do like Kenny did with Twitter, where it was just happy birthday to various former players or whatever. Like, you've got to have every outlet that there is for promotion and program promotion and such. Like, you've got to be active on it because they're all active on it.
Especially if you're not known. Like, especially if you're an up-and-coming coach. Like, if you're new to the scene on this level, like a Pat Kelsey. Like Bill Self doesn't have to be on Instagram. Like, he's Bill Self. You know, Tom Izzo, whatever. Like, they're tried and true. They've got a bunch of testimonies, whatever. But if you're Pat Kelsey and this is your first year at a Power 5 program, having 200 Instagram videos or Twitter videos or whatever to kind of show off your personality to a recruit is good stuff. Because he doesn't know you. And he didn't watch College of Charleston. He didn't watch Winthrop. But if I can get on Instagram, if I can get on Twitter and just get an inkling of who the coach is and how he acts, and I can say, that's not my style, or that's kind of intriguing. That's good. Because it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea. Like, it's just not. But to a lot of players, it's going to be intriguing to try to play for a guy like that, especially when he's trying to make his bones at a big-time program like Louisville. So it was cool. It was cool to hear that.
Anything else from those players today from the – like, they're part of the press conference? I thought – three very different guys, but you could see what they had in common. The real level-headedness about all three of them, real mature, but like really different personalities. Like you could just really tell.
Yeah.
Chucky Hepburn is a quiet dude.
Oh, he's stone cold.
Who said basically like, you know, when he does quirky stuff in practice, like, I'm going to have to learn to laugh.
Yeah.
Which, man, you know, and then Javon Hadley is seems like a very even keeled guy. But I think is a guy that seems like I expect him to be a leader, like a captain.
Vocal leader.
Yes,
that.
He strikes me that way. And Rain Smith is like, I know exactly what my role is. I'm good at this and I'm going to do it and never cause any issues whatsoever.
Yeah.
They're all very different. And God, can this season get here already?
Oh, man. Who are you telling? Like, no, so that was cool. Even with the Javon Hadley, because obviously when you're piecing a new 13-man roster together, all you can do is make assumptions and guess and say, hey, this is what I think. But now we're starting to – the door starting to crack open. We're starting to, you know, learn these guys, learn the coach and stuff. And one thing that Kelsey – he wouldn't give us anything as far as, like, who's the top dog or who's standing out, none of that stuff. The only individual thing that he did give us was that the first name he said – when addressing something specific was Javon Hadley when it came to leadership. And he said that, and even he said, that was just the first name I thought of. Well, there's a and then when Javon Hadley came in the room, that makes sense why that was the first name he thought of. Mm-hmm. Because when they took the podium, Javon Hadley seemed to be the guy that really was stoic, very well-spoken, really kind of, you can tell, he kind of put everything into perspective. It's like a lot of us here are here for one more year. He's the one that kind of raved about the fan base. He's the one that first pointed out, like, what's different here? Like, I've been playing college basketball, high-level college basketball. This Louisville stuff, it's a little different here. He also was the one to say, hey, a lot of us are last-year guys. We're trying to make the most out of this year. He was the one to kind of put a lot of things in perspective, and so it was like, oh, you're the vocal leader. That makes sense. That's why Kelsey thought of you when they said who's standing out as far as leadership. He thought of your name because you handled yourself really, really well and kind of proved us like why we believe now that you could possibly be the vocal leader of this team.
I liked Hadley saying basically, like, this is very similar to what we did
in Colorado.
When I was at Colorado. And then Chuck Hepburn's like, we didn't do none of this stuff.
Wisconsin.
We
know.
Right.
We know.
Exactly. Seems like even if they necessarily didn't aim for all of that, they did wind up with a real diverse group of personalities and styles and skills. What I thought was fascinating was Rain Smith, you know, who knows exactly how this goes, in talking about like what's kind of different about it, he's like, oh, this team's way better.
Yeah.
than what we had at Charleston. Like, for him, like, they were good teams. And he's like, this is way more better players than we ever had at Charleston. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Keep going.
I like that. Yeah. And, I mean, when Mark says good teams, we're talking like 31-win teams, 28, 27-win teams. Like, they had really high-level teams. And to me, what was more impressive was when Hadley said the same thing. Because we just saw another Colorado guy get drafted. So you had two first-round picks, a second-round pick, and a team that made some noise in the NCAA tournament. And he's like, yo, our team's going to be good. Like, our team is going to be good, and he knows what good teams look like. And that was super impressive to me because, like, he didn't have to say that. He, like, said that with a smile, like, yo, man, we're going to be good. And we're going to – and more specifically, he said, we're going to be good on the defensive end. Like, that's where we're going to – he almost sounded like that's where we're going to make our bones is by playing high-level defense. And one thing that Kloman said, Coach Kloman, Brian Kloman said in that Twitter spaces was, you know, at Charleston and at Winthrop, we were limited on athletes. So you had to choose, am I going to go out and get a team full of guys to stop people, or am I going to go out and get a team full of guys that can put the ball in the basket? Well, we chose to get the guys that can put the ball in the basket. At Louisville, you don't have to choose. You can get both. You get two-way guys. And that makes a world of difference. And it sounds like they went out there and got a bunch of guys that can put the ball in the basket, but when it's time to, you know, wipe your shoes off and get down into defensive stance, they can do that too and stay in front of people. And that was good to hear.
Yeah, there were a couple of times in answering questions there were some references to strategies or like what their principles are supposed to be. And he's like, I'm still trying to get used to it. But it was like, I think he called it like find the trailer or something like that. I'm trying to remember what the phrase was that he used. And it really doesn't matter what it means. They're already trying to inculcate it.
Yes.
And I really don't know that we ever got the first principle about anything that they were trying to do as an offense that could none of them, from Kenny down to any player at all, could ever really verbalize what they were going for. And you certainly couldn't tell by watching.
Yeah, and on defense, they kind of, you know, they finally revealed, at least Brandon did at the end of the season, like, yeah, we just bonded together by not knowing what to do.
Yeah, that was what we had in common.
Yeah, we bonded together because we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And at least we all don't know together. He said it. He said that. Granted, it was the last game of the season, but it was said. And so it wasn't that they couldn't verbalize it to it. They didn't know. Yeah. It's hard to verbalize something you don't know. And that's rough after, what, roughly 40 games. Your senior leader or one of your older players can't even tell you what your defensive principles are. The last game of the season, that can't happen. And that won't happen with this team this year.
All right, that is going to do it for us. You all have been listening to The Drive on Thunderville.